Chapter 6 Draco's Detour. Harry remained within the confines of the Burrows garden over the next few weeks. He spent most of his days playing two-a-side Quidditch in the Weasley's orchard, he and Hermione against Ron and Ginny. Hermione was dreadful and Ginny good, so they were reasonably well matched. And his evenings eating triple helpings of everything Mrs. Weasley put in front of him. It would have been a happy, peaceful holiday had it not been for the stories of disappearances, odd accidents, even of deaths now appearing almost daily in The Prophet. Sometimes Bill and Mr. Weasley brought home news before it even reached the paper. To Mrs. Weasley's displeasure, Harry's 16th birthday celebrations were marred by grisly tidings brought to the party by Remus Lupin, who was looking gaunt and grim, his brown hair streaked liberally with grey, his clothes more ragged and patched than ever. "There have been another couple of Dementor attacks," he announced, as Mrs. Weasley passed him a large slice of birthday cake. "And they found Igor Karkaroff's body in a shack up north. The dark mark had been set over it. Well, frankly, I'm surprised he stayed alive for even a year after deserting the Death Eaters. Sirius's brother, Regulus, only managed a few days as far as I can remember."
"Yes, well," said Mrs. Weasley, frowning, "perhaps we should talk about something Did
you hear about Florian Fortescue, Remus?" asked Bill, who was being plied with wine by Fleur. "The man who ran..." "The ice cream place in Diagon Alley," Harry interrupted, with an unpleasant hollow sensation in the pit of his stomach. "He used to give me free ice creams. What's happened to him?"
"Dragged off, by the look of his place."
"Why?" asked Ron, while Mrs. Weasley pointedly glared at Bill.
"Who knows?
He must have upset them somehow. He was a good man, Florian."
"Talking of Diagon Alley," said Mr. Weasley, "looks like Ollivander's gone too."
"The wand maker?" said Ginny, looking startled.
"That's the one. Shop's empty, no sign of a struggle. No one knows whether he left voluntarily or was kidnapped."
"But wands? What'll people do for wands?"
"They'll make do with other makers," said Lupin. "But Ollivander was the best, and if the other side has got him, it's not so good for us." The day after this rather gloomy birthday tea, their letters and book lists arrived from Hogwarts. Harry's included a surprise. He had been made Quidditch captain.
"That gives you equal status with prefects," cried Hermione happily. "You can use our special bathroom now and everything."
"Wow! I remember when Charlie wore one of these,"
said Ron, examining the badge with glee.
"Harry, this is so cool! You're my captain, if you let me back on the team, I suppose.
Well, I don't suppose we can put off a trip to Diagon Alley much longer now you've got these," sighed Mrs. Weasley, looking down Ron's book list. "We'll go on Saturday, as long as your father doesn't have to go into work again. I'm not going there without him."
"Mom, do you honestly think you know who's going to be hiding behind a bookshelf in Flourish and Blotts?" sniggered Ron.
"Fortescue and Ollivander went on holiday, did they?"
said Mrs. Weasley, firing up at once.
"If you think security's a laughing matter, you can stay behind and I'll get your things myself."
"No, I want to come. I want to see Fred and Georgie's shop,"
said Ron hastily.
"Then you just buck up your ideas, young man, before I decide you're too immature to come with us,"
said Mrs. Weasley angrily, snatching up her clock, all nine hands of which were still pointing at mortal peril, and balancing it on top of a pile of just laundered towels.
"And that goes for returning to Hogwarts as well."
Ron turned to stare incredulously at Harry as his mother hoisted the laundry basket and the teetering clock into her arms and stormed out of the room.
"Blimey, you can't even make a joke round here anymore."
But Ron was careful not to be flippant about Voldemort over the next few days. Saturday dawned without any more outbursts from Mrs. Weasley, though she seemed very tense at breakfast. Bill, who would be staying at home with Fleur, much to Hermione and Ginny's pleasure, passed a full money bag across the table to Harry.
"Where's mine?"
demanded Ron at once, his eyes wide.
"That's already Harry's, idiot," said Bill. "I got it out of your vault for you, Harry, because it's taking about 5 hours for the public to get to their gold at the moment. The goblins have tightened security so much.
2 days ago, Archie Philpot had a probity probe stuck up his... Well, trust me, this way's easier.
Thanks, Bill, said Harry, pocketing his gold.
He is always so thoughtful,
purred Fleur adoringly, stroking Bill's nose. Ginny mimed vomiting into her cereal behind Fleur.
Harry choked over his cornflakes and Ron thumped him on the back. It was an overcast, murky day. One of the special Ministry of Magic cars, in which Harry had ridden once before, was awaiting them in the front yard when they emerged from the house, pulling on their cloaks.
It's good Dad can get us these again, said Ron appreciatively, stretching luxuriously as the car moved smoothly away from the burrow, Bill and Fleur waving from the kitchen window. He, Harry, Hermione and Ginny were all sitting in roomy comfort in the wide back seat.
Don't get used to it. It's only because of Harry, said Mr. Weasley over his shoulder.
He and Mrs. Weasley were in front with a ministry driver. The front passenger seat had obligingly stretched into what resembled a two-seater sofa.
He's been given top-grade security status, and will be joining up with additional security at the Leaky Cauldron, too.
Harry said nothing. He did not much fancy doing his shopping while surrounded by a battalion of Aurors. He had sewed his invisibility cloak in his backpack and felt that, if it was good enough for Dumbledore, it ought to be good enough for the Ministry. Though now he came to think of it, he was not sure the Ministry knew about his cloak.
Here you are, then,
said the driver, a surprisingly short while later, speaking for the first time as he slowed in Charing Cross Road and stopped outside the Leaky Cauldron.
I'm to wait for you. Any idea how long you'll be?
A couple of hours, I expect, said Mr. Weasley.
Ah, good, he's here.
Harry imitated Mr. Weasley and peered through the window. His heart leapt. There were no Aurors waiting outside the inn, but instead the gigantic black-bearded form of Rubeus Hagrid, the Hogwarts gamekeeper, wearing a long beaver-skin coat, beaming at the sight of Harry's face and oblivious to the startled stares of passing muggles.
Harry, he boomed, sweeping Harry into a bone-crushing hug the moment Harry had stepped out of the car. Buckbeak, with the wings, I mean. You should see him. Harry, he's so happy to be back in the open air.
Glad he's pleased, said Harry, grinning as he massaged his ribs. We didn't know security meant you.
I know, just like old times, innit? You see, the Ministry wanted to send a bunch of Aurors, but Dumbledore said I'd do,
said Hagrid proudly, throwing out his chest and tucking his thumbs into his pockets.
Let's get going, then. After you, Molly, Arthur.
The Leaky Cauldron was, for the first time in Harry's memory, completely empty. Only Tom, the landlord, wizened and toothless, remained of the old crowd. He looked up hopefully as they entered, but before he could speak, Hagrid said importantly,
Just passing through today, Tom. Sure you understand? Hogwarts business, you know.